Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. Welcome to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to be here for the next hour talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on the Walter Anderson Nursery main Facebook page. We would love to hear from you. And remember, Anderson is spelled A-N-D-E-R-S-E-N, not S-O-N. Sometimes that gets messed up. And there's a gentleman who has walteranderson.com spelled with an O, and he forwards the emails to us from time to time. So it's A-N-D-E-R-S-E-N, and we would be more than happy to talk to you. Today we're going to be talking about roses, a perennial favorite in San Diego. And it's, to this day, as long, I've been in this business for, well, my whole life, but I've actually
literally
but doing it professionally for basically 44 years now. It amazes me how many roses we sell every year. We sell, between the two stores, we sell thousands of roses every year. And the other thing that amazes me is there's a lot of the roses that we sell every year, with the same variety, which people have their favorites, but you would think that you would hit the law of diminishing returns at some point in time, kind of like fruit trees, yeah. but we have not. And so it's a very interesting segment of our business. And we have a special guest today, Natalie Stout, who is a consulting rosarian for the American Rose Society.
Yes.
And are you a member of the San Diego Rose Society
as
well? I'm
a member, and I just finished my term being president, and it was a wonderful experience. Yes.
Yeah.
We hail to the chief.
It's been a while since I've heard about it. I don't know if the Rose Society used to do a big rose show every spring at the Balboa Park Club. In Balboa Park.
Yeah, we no longer do it in the Balboa Park Club. I think other events displaced us.
Oh, okay.
So now we do it at the Ronald Reagan Community Center in El Cajon.
Oh, okay.
And it's a wonderful facility. The staff is so great to us, and the Rose Show works out really well. It's actually coming up, just coincidentally. It's on Saturday, May 3rd and Sunday, May 4th.
Okay.
And it's open to the public from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock on Saturday and 10 o'clock to 2:30 on Sunday. There's also a rose auction that'll be taking place at 2:30 on Sunday. And it's just a lot of fun. If you've never been to a rose show, it's not what you think. There's a lot of beautiful roses. It's not stuffy. It's not snooty. It's a great opportunity to go learn more about your own roses, see roses you might want to grow. And it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Prior to COVID, we used to host a rose show here at the store every spring. And unfortunately, we just have not been able to get that back in order again. Since COVID, we've have other things going, other more pressing issues, unfortunately. But one of the things about rose shows that has always fascinated me is when you go to a rose show, you don't see, there's a lot of roses that are on display that you don't find in retail stores. Some absolutely stunning roses that I think are basically grown just for show, because they're not abundantly commercially available.
Right.
And you have to look for some of those roses and try to find them. And the people and rosarians like you are very good at finding them.
And we hunt them down.
Yes. One of the best resources for roses that I've ever seen is I can't remember the exact title.
Help Me Find Roses.
The rose, is it the Rose Guide? The book that where it lists all of the roses by name, and then it tells you who grows them. And so you can contact those growers directly. I know, for example, one of my dad's favorite roses, and we've never stocked it in the store because none of our wholesale suppliers grow it, is now I can't remember the name. I can't think of it. Off
it'll
the
pop into your head.
It'll pop into my head. But Fred Edmonds grows it up in Oregon. Okay. And so Fred Edmonds is a great resource for unusual roses.
Yes.
Ones that are harder to find. But how did you get involved in growing roses, other than the fact that they're just really pretty plants? And
They are. I have always been a lover of gardening. And so when I got my first house, it was like, oh boy, I get to garden. So I would go to the nursery at least once a month, and I would buy a couple of plants that were in bloom and add them to the garden. And as I did that, I started realizing that I was always having something in bloom all the time. And I need color. I just need color. So that's kind of my selection criteria for everything. And so as my garden got bigger and bigger, I realized how many roses I had because they were the colorful guys a lot of the time. So that, you know, went on for years and years, and I got a nice garden and it did very well. And I was very happy and very proud of it. But you don't always know what you don't know. So one day my local garden club in Kensington was taking a tour of the Balboa Park Rose Garden, and our docent there was wonderful, knowledgeable man named Bob Kolb, who's still part of our society. And he mentioned the Rose Society was having a meeting the next night, and my head just exploded like a little emoji. I was just like, oh my God, I can go somewhere and talk to people about roses. So I went to the Rose Society meeting. I haven't missed one since. Everyone there is so nice, so willing to share their expertise, willing to tell you where to find the good roses, and just willing to tell you how to grow them better. And there is the Consulting Rosarian program that helps you learn how to help other people. So once you get to the point where you feel like you're really doing all the things and you're understanding things, you sort of want to pass that on. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how the Consulting Rosarian thing came about.
Very interesting. Yeah, the Streepers had been customer of ours for Dick Streeper and his wife had been customers of ours for many, many years. And I remember it was almost on an annual basis back when the Union Tribune was still a major publication. they would print Dick's formula for growing roses, and people would come in and it was a laundry list of things that he used, and people would come in and we would say, you know, if it's not quite that complicated, you have to realize that Dick is growing roses for competition. Right. And if you just want to grow roses to have roses in your yard, it's not that complicated.
Right.
We basically tell people Grow Power and Ada Perry's magic formula.
I mean, Ada Perry back in the day from Walter Anderson's nursery.
Twice
she was
a year.
Great. Ada was July. Wonderful.
Yeah, yep. January and July. When you plant a bare root and when you prune them in July.
I think it's very important too, Natalie, that you mentioned that plant people are really wonderful, friendly, sharing people. You know, don't be afraid of these societies. I mean, if you're interested in any plant, I suggest you, whether it's bromeliads, Orchid Society, Cactus Succulent Society, dahlias, I mean, the Iris Society, these people are totally nuts about their particular genre, their niche, and they want to really give you everything you need to know and help you and get you great plants. And the societies will get you plants that you'll never find anyplace else.
Yeah, the societies are an absolute gem of a resource for anybody that's interested in plants. And actually, and almost all of them meet at
Casa del Prado,
Room 101 at Casa del Prado. And if you go to the San Diego Botanical Garden Foundation, which is different than the San Diego Botanical Garden, they have a list of all the societies and the meetings
big calendar that they publish.
And the shows that they're doing as well.
So to your point, John, I had two things. To your point, I agree with you. You can find the niche. You can find, I only like yellow flowers that smell like, you know, pick some, and there's a society for that. Sure. You know, you can find it. But what I was going to say, Ken, you said this is very, you know, roses are not that hard. It's relatively easy. And I thought that might be a good segue for Natalie to talk about the basics of growing, you know, the mm-hmm. sunlight, the water, the spot that you put it in the yard, mm-hmm. the soil that you might use, mulch, right. things of that sort. You know, what is your go-to for?
So see if I can remember your order.
The sunlight. Not necessarily in that order. Yep.
The sunlight. The common wisdom is that your roses need at least 6 hours of sunlight a day. That's kind of optimum. So it's sort of like, if you're building a bomb, maybe twice as much explosives isn't good. Like the right amount is the right amount. So if you have a rose that's in 12 hours of sun in the summer, that might be too much for it. So you've got to consider that maybe, you know, that rose might belong in a pot and you can move it to a shadier location if it needs to during a dry spell. Or you might want to have market umbrellas to put out to shade your plants during the hotter times. I have other plants that are only happy in the shade, not full shade, but, you know, a good amount of shade.
Filtered light
yeah. or just morning sun, okay. that kind of thing. And my Austins all do better in those conditions than they do in the bright sun. But yet I have a friend in Crest who grows all the Austins and they are just in the sun and they are happy as clams. So,
well, at Verona.
My mind went to Verona as well.
They have the best looking Austins I've ever seen, mm-hmm. or at least they used to when, was it David?
David Lund.
Yeah. Who yeah. was the caretaker out there, yeah. Which is the rose garden at Verona is a hidden gem in San Diego.
It is fabulous.
Yeah.
Dick Slater always founded that.
Oh, did he?
He did, as well as the Balboa Park Garden.
Okay.
Yes.
And they have buckets full of bottles of water.
That is true, too. That's a good yes. point.
Yes. Cold water, you just go look at the roses, you get water. And when David was there, I took many people to that rose garden. David would always cut roses and send them home with you.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Which was really a lovely thing.
But he grew the best David Austins I've ever. I appreciate David Austins for what they are, but they just, the plants themselves just never looked that great. They're kind of rambly, kind of.
They are shrubbier.
It's kind of shrubbier.
They need to be masked.
They need to be in rows. And that's hedgerows. The way they do it out. That's the way they do it out at Verona. I think they're all planted in threes.
Look good.
Yeah, yep. and they're stunning. And as far as fragrance, it's hard to find roses that have better fragrance than David Austin
and
roses.
So consistently, because overall, yeah. I think only 20 or 25% of roses have fragrance, but David Austin's almost always yeah. do.
What we've seen over time in this business is that they were growing, hybridizing roses more for the flower, for the look of the flower than the fragrance. But that's kind of shifted and started to mm-hmm. come back. We're talking to Natalie Stout, a consulting rosarian here in San Diego, a member of the San Diego Rose Society. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Garden Talk right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. And our special guest, Natalie Stout from the San Diego Rose Society and also a consulting rosarian. And we've been talking about roses, and we have a lot more to talk about going into this. We were talking about culture and how to grow roses. Are there any tips that you have that for being successful that you can think of?
Yes. And this is something I got, again, out of my Rose Society membership. I learned that if you have a plan for the year and you look at the year holistically, as opposed to just, oh, it looks like it needs this, it looks like it needs that, you're going to have a much better garden. And I'm sure that applies to everything, but the roses thrive on it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, starting on Valentine's Day, you put down a nice balanced organic to get the roses kind of woken up from their dormancy, which it's not a real dormancy, but it's an induced dormancy. Mm-hmm. And so something nice and light like Ada Perry's mm-hmm. is a great start for that. And then if you exhibit or are crazy and like to feed more often, you can do that. And things like Magnum Rose, which I know you guys carry, and Fish mm-hmm. Emulsion and Seaweed are all fabulous things to give your roses on a, you know, maybe once a month, maybe every 3 weeks basis, depending on how feedy you want to be. Mm-hmm. And you do that, you cut it back a little bit in the summertime, and then you go back to a little bigger regimen because you're going to have your second best bloom of the year in the fall. Mm-hmm. You're having your best one. The roses yeah. are getting ready right now, but in the fall you have your second best one. And then at Halloween, you cut off the food train so that the roses go back to sleep and get a nice rest before you prune them in January or February. And the other thing you stop doing is spraying. You stop doing as much manual hygiene and cutting on them because you just want them to rust. And as much as everybody says, take your hips off, take your hips off, Halloween, you stop doing that because the roses need those seeds to tell them that they've done a really good job this year so that they'll do a better job next year.
Interesting. I have not heard that. That's very interesting.
I have to share. I've shared that with my wife frequently because she's very neat, as you know, and she likes the roses to be deadheaded all the time. And as soon as the hips come, it bothers her because they're not roses. But she know we know this particular thing, and we are very, let them stay. The plant needs to know I'm taking a break now.
Yes. Yeah.
No, and you can always harvest them and make tea out of them.
I used to do that, and that's why I don't use systemics. I haven't done it here lately, but we used to do that.
You know, I would say as far as diseases are concerned, the two biggest problems that we face, and one of them is only intermittently, it seems to cycle through every couple of years or so, but powdery mildew, very, very common. Mm-hmm. Powdery mildew and rust, the two biggest problems that anybody will have growing roses. And even out here where it's hotter and drier, we still have an issue with it. Yes. So that's one of the ones. And then the one that's really bad as far as a disease standpoint is concerned is downy mildew. Yes. And that can really wreak havoc once it gets started. And that is very, very weather related as far as the growing conditions for it. But once it takes hold, it's very, very difficult to control. Powdery mildew and rust, relatively easy to control.
They are common. Mm-hmm. Part of maintaining your roots as well is to keep them in a state of good hygiene. Mm-hmm. So I'm out in the garden every day looking for powdery mildew and rust. And, you know, if I see them, even if it breaks my heart because there's a nice fresh cane coming up, if it's got a bunch of powdery mildew on it, I'm going to snip that cane down below the powdery mildew so that it can't persist on the plant. And that helps some. I do spray because I have a very crowded garden because I can't resist buying all the plants.
So, that's not a bad habit. Yeah.
No.
If that's your worst thing, life is good.
Yes. So I make sure that I include components in my spray, every spray, that are going to address funguses like powdery mildew and rust. And the nice thing about the sprays that places like Walter Anderson have available is that they are broad spectrum and they're going to hit both of those problems together.
Yeah.
And so that's very nice.
I'm sorry, do you have a preference as to what you spray?
I actually rotate three different fungal sprays. So the BioAdvance 3-in-1, the liquid, not the granular systemic that also feeds and stuff. That's just the liquid that's the spray. And then I rotate Immunox and I rotate Neem. And then in the summer, when it's maybe too hot for neem, I might use azadiractin instead because it's just the neem derivative, but it doesn't have all that bonus oil so that you sunburn your plants. So that's something to be careful of. Also in the spring, when the powdery mildew and rust are especially heavy, I like to use some copper in my spray mix because that is good. But I put the copper away at the end of April because, again, I don't want to burn my plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talking about powdery mildew and rust, you had mentioned the powdery mildew on the canes. Powdery mildew typically hits the newer foliage first, whereas from my experience, rust typically starts
the bottom.
At the bottom. And one of the telltale signs that you may have a rust infestation or infection
or squeaky is plants.
The yellow foliage.
Mm-hmm.
Rust, fortunately, if you start to see the yellow foliage, like you said, with good hygiene, you just go and pick that foliage off and throw it away.
Right.
And compost it.
But don't drop it in the garden.
Yeah. Just get rid of it.
Yeah. Well, you said my favorite word. You said pick it off because you pick it off. You don't cut it off because if you cut it off, you're leaving the leaf, end of the leaf, the stipule there, and all the little bacteria and bugs and everybody can go hide in there and just come right back. So that's an important thing.
Yeah. And do you practice we usually tell people that two major pruning seasons, usually in dormancy, starting around November, but even up through January or so, is when you do the heavy pruning and then cut back again in July, typically in July.
Actually, we do it differently. I'm going to preface this by saying in the Rose Society, we promote that you get lots of choices about what you want to do in your garden.
I think that's true with just about any plant. You talk to seven different people, you're going to get seven different answers.
Eight different answers. Yeah. Talk to seven people.
So the San Diego Rose Society typically hosts a pruning demonstration in Balboa Park the second Saturday of January, which we sort of regard as the beginning of pruning season.
Okay.
Those of us who have a bazillion roses might start a little bit earlier, but from then until like Valentine's Day, when it's time for me to give my first feeding, I'm busy pruning roses all the time. And that's kind of what we considered that first pruning season. And that's where you want to make sure you get every leaf out of the garden, get things just as clean as you can. I do want to speak to not pruning too heavily because we live in San Diego. We don't live in Massachusetts. So if you're pruning your rose somewhere like relative to its height, if you're taking a third off the top, you're probably doing enough. If your roses are ending up shorter than your knees, you're probably doing too much, unless it's a miniature. Somewhere between your knee and your hip for most roses is probably about right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have maybe 10 roses in my yard. And when I prune them back, I usually prune them back to about 14 inches. So I guess that's about knee height. Yeah. So somewhere in that area.
Well, and that's what you see come into the nursery that's been tractor pruned in the field.
That's too. True. Right. Yeah. Right. That is true. Yeah. I went to University of San Diego High School, and they had a big rose garden there at the old campus down before they moved to Carmel Mountain and became Cathedral Catholic. They had a big rose garden there. And I remember every year the maintenance crew would go through and they would cut them down to the graft. So there was the trunk would come up, and then there was a ball about the size of a grapefruit, and they would cut it back. So that's all that was left was the ball. But for whatever reason, they came back and they were quite stunning.
Yeah.
I think they were Queen Elizabeth. So it's a big plant.
It is. And it's a diseasey plant. And the diseasier, maybe the lower you need to cut too. So there is a relationship there.
So that was always very interesting.
Well, and the big pest for me has always been not so much the diseases. We can keep that under control. You can spray rose slugs.
Yes.
Bristly rose
little
slugs.
Boogers.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think I see that as a issue for almost everybody.
Yeah. That's a nasty one.
Yeah.
And they can live a year in slug form and then hatch into sawflies and live another year or so. Mm. So they really persist. So that's another thing where you want to go out and pick those leaves off and get them out of your garden.
Yeah, it's relatively easy to control, but you have to be vigilant. And as soon as you see one hole in the leaf, you need to start taking control of it, because otherwise it's just going to wipe them out.
Organically, spinosad works very well.
I actually put spinosad in every spray that I do. So we talked about the fungicides, but I add spinosad so that I always have an insecticide as well.
Nice.
And I also, especially in the summer, try to make sure I include a miticide. So with neem, I'm hitting all the bases. Right. With 3-in-1, I'm hitting all the bases. But I'm also still adding the spinosad to both of those. And then with the Spectracide Imunox, I'll make sure I add the spinosad, and then maybe I'll buy a fancy miticide online because I don't know of anything that you guys sell that has that.
I remember Kelthane. Kelthane was the thing.
Can't get it anymore.
One.
Yeah, no, Kelthane. Isotox was.
Oh, and Isotox
was the go-to. Yeah, but you mentioned the BioAdvance 3-in-1. That is. Or if you're looking for a broad spectrum non-organic control, the 3-in-1 is probably the best thing on the market.
Mm-hmm.
It controls just about everything.
And they did just take the imocloprid out of it.
I think it's been replaced with acephate, which
I don't like acephate. That smells.
That's an organophosphate for sure.
It is definitely organophosphate. Wistfully we look back with such kind regard for all the chemicals we can no longer get.
Bonide makes 8, which is a broad spectrum insecticide that works really well. And I think it's a synthetic.
It's pyrethrin.
Yeah. So it's all the thrins.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. All of the thrins. But it, you know, talking about the three in one, one time, Melanie had told me, she said, "Oh, we have rose slug on the roses. You need to spray them." So I said, "Okay, well, I'll take care of it." I've shared this story before. Went out in the garage, grabbed the blue bottle, hooked it up to the hose, and sprayed it. Yeah, I grabbed the weed killer.
Oh no! So.
Well, and with roses, that's especially bad. If you even show a rose a picture of Roundup, it dies.
Yeah, this was the broadleaf weed killer for the lawn. And a couple of days later, the roses just were all mangled and twisted. And they all survived. But
did Melanie come in and say the rose slugs look even worse today out there? The plants looked
a lot worse. That is for sure. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're talking to Natalie Stout from the San Diego Rose Society and Consulting Rosarian, and talking about roses in general. We've gone over a lot, but I think there's probably more that we can talk about as far as culture is concerned. We talked about location, how much sunlight they need. What about soil? As far as do you recommend? There's been a trend in horticulture lately to go with more natural soil and not amend as much. What are your thoughts as far as roses are concerned?
Roses like sandy loam. So clay's too much for them, sand's too much for them. They want some sandy loam.
Okay.
And they like 6.5-ish pH. And so you can amend to that, but basically your roses will make do with what you've got. They'll be happier if they get their fertilizer. And if you have a fertilizer program where you use a lot of organics over time, that's going to change your soil to what the roses want anyway. So it's a good thing. I do know people who will compost like crazy before they plant a rose, or even compost a whole bed, like big bed. And if I were doing such a big bed, I would probably just do my holes and not do the whole darn thing. But anyway, I do containers. And so my favorite soil is the EB Stone Rose and Flower, because I know that it's exactly what the roses want. So I have very happy roses.
Yeah. So you use that straight out of the bag.
I don't use that straight out of the bag. And one of the things I love about it is that it's both a planting soil and a potting soil. So, and I also like that it doesn't have perlite. I'm not a big perlite fan. So, because, you know, the roses have enough trouble getting as much water as they want because they are water hogs without the perlite in there. So it's just nice to have a good soil.
A friend of mine who was in the Rose Society for a long time grew roses for a competition. We were talking about it during the break, and he grew all of his roses in containers. He didn't have anything in the ground, and he had all of the roses on a drip irrigation system. So they all got the same amount of water. It was very consistent. He grew absolutely beautiful roses. If you're tied down for space, containers are an option, but you have to water them though. Like you said, they do like water.
Mm-hmm. So they love
water. You need to make sure that they're getting plenty of water.
That goes to the mulch part.
Yes.
Are you a fan of mulch?
I am a fan of mulch.
Especially in the ground.
Yeah. Especially in the ground. It's a little hard sometimes to reserve enough room in my container to have room to put enough mulch, but in the ground, if you can put a 3-inch layer of mulch, you are doing your rose a huge service. You're protecting it from the sun, you're keeping the water in, you're protecting it from weeds. It's just a very good thing. We in the Rose Society like to use a finer mulch, like a 3/4-inch screened, that's going to break down over the course of the year and help the soil and make the soil better for the roses. And then we put the new layer on every year, February or March, when we're done pruning.
I love to mulch. And in fact, I think I'm always saying mulch, mulch, mulch. And the issue that I find too, it's very important, is that you can really eliminate a lot of the disease. But what happens, people leave the mulch. And then just before I clean out all the roses, get all the dead leaves gone, then put a fresh layer of mulch. Mm-hmm. So then you're going to prevent the spores from coming up. The same thing holds true for camellia blight. If you put a fresh layer of mulch before the rains hit, then you tend to not get camellia blight.
It suppresses it.
Yeah, it doesn't splash. Because then it's not splashing and you're covering that up.
You mentioned they're water hogs.
They are.
So in the ground, what would be a, obviously all soils are different, all climates are different, but a manageable amount of water that we should be providing to roses.
Remember when we were on water rationing, and we will be again someday, I'm sure, how they gave us all 3 days a week to water. So that works. Like they would sort of like more, and maybe every once in a while in the summer, you might need to sneak a little more, but that works really well. And then in the winter, you can kind of slow it down. You can just do 2 days a week or whatever, but I'm watching the temperature every day. So if it's it's in the 70s or the 80s, I'm sticking with my three times a week. If it's in the 90s, I'm going to sneak in an extra watering here and there. If it's in the 60s, I'm going to take some time off.
But in a pot, obviously, needs more frequent watering.
It does.
Than in the ground, because we water ours, when you saw the layer mm-hmm. of mulch we have, we water ours once a week in the heat of the summer.
Wow.
That's great. A good soaking.
Yeah. And you obviously have a very
George's
healthy
mulch
bed.
Pile,
yeah, we have mulch and mulch.
Like a semi-truck load. Yes.
And then some. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I think most of the roses in my yard are on a, that's probably three, I think it's 3 days a week right now as we're going into summer, but I water them three times a day because the soil doesn't, doesn't drain. So
how many minutes total?
Probably about, I think right now, probably around 18 minutes a day.
Well, and when people talk about watering in terms of time, they don't necessarily consider the emitter size. Oh, so that, yeah. My favorite pot.
Yeah, mine are on sprinklers.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. My favorite pot is a 15 gallon. Mm-hmm. So for a 15 gallon, I'm running 20 minutes with 3 or 4 gallons of emitter, depending on the sun or shade. And I'm doing that three times a week. So I'm basically giving 3 or 4 gallons a week.
So Natalie, what kind of emitters are you using?
I like the little drip guys from Netafim, and I also like the ones from Dig. Mm-hmm. And then I also like, Netafim has these spray sticks that are really hard to find, but I like those a lot. Mm-hmm. So they've got a 3 gallon spray stick, and that's perfect for a rose in a 15 gallon pot.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest issues that we see when people are doing drip irrigation, and it even holds true for so-called professionals in the field. People don't understand the difference between a regular sprinkler system and a drip irrigation system, and they think the timing is the same, and it's not. Yeah. And 95% of the time when people are having issues with irrigation, it's a drip irrigation system that they have put in, and they're running it at the same time intervals that they run used to run their sprinklers. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work.
And often they'll be quite defensive when you're trying to help them and you say, you know, it looks like it's not getting enough water. Oh, I water it 4 times a week.
Yeah.
Well, how do you water? It's on a drip. It gets watered 4 times a week. 10 minutes every time it goes
out. Yes, sassy pants. Okay.
With a 1 gallon emitter.
Or a half gallon emitter when you pull the string back. Yeah.
You know, we also have a situation, we call it MP related drought conditions. Mm-hmm. So people will convert from either the old school stream rotors or the gear driven hunters or Toros. And then they think, well, I'm going to save water or just fan sprays. And they put in MP rotors and they leave the time the same. And you think, and then they go, I don't know, my plants aren't doing so well. It's because you need to up the quantity because you've diminished how much those emitters are putting out.
Yeah, I during the last drought, I converted my back lawn to MP rotors, and I did know enough to increase the increase the duration. And they're fantastic. It really was revolutionary as far as sprinklers are concerned.
Can I ask a question about feeding again? You had mentioned, you know, you like to use organics and monthly or every 3 weeks, fish emulsion and kelp and such.
And Magnum Rose which is not an organic, but that's where you get your phosphorus, micro mineral.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That was going to be my question. Do you have a preference or do you encourage a higher middle number, higher phosphorus formula at a certain point throughout the year to increase blooms or not?
Many of us do not. I do. Okay. So in June, I will usually put a little bit of Hawaiian button bloom in with my Magnum Rose.
That's like a 50.
It's
phosphorus.
Like a 50. Yes. Wow. It's like 51, I think. Yeah. But I just do the tiniest bit. So if I'm doing a thing where I'm doing 6 ounces of Magnum Rose, I'm going to add 1 ounce of Hawaiian button bloom. I'm not going to go crazy because the roses would not know what to do with all that phosphorus. Mm-hmm. But if I do that in June, I'm going to have roses throughout the summer dormancy so that I've at least got some color when everybody else's roses are not there. Mm.
So interesting.
I really did like the adjective you used. I'm going to steal that. Feedy. Just depending on how feedy you want to be. I'm going to remember that. That was really good, Natalie.
Yes. Yeah. We'll give you full credit.
Yes, we will. We'll give credit. You know, one of the things that I think would help the rose industry a bit. So I'm a rose guy. I've always loved roses, the hybrid teas, the grandifloras. I like rugosas. I like them all. I love David Austin's, and I put a 1 acre David Austin rose garden in for a client. They flew me in to do this. I love them. But you know, I think one of the things that is different these days is that rose gardens look like rose gardens, hybrid teas, grandifloras, all that. And so many people now are doing natives or they're doing drought tolerant landscape. And I think the unsung heroes of the rose garden now would be the single petal roses, because they really look awfully nice in context of a drought tolerant or even a native garden. You could do something like Sally Holmes. I love Sally Holmes. She's or beautiful. Mermaid, Cherokee. One of my favorite roses from 40 years ago was Betty Pryor. Do you remember the single petal, bright pink? It was gorgeous. So I think sometimes people need to rethink the look of roses, that they're still applicable. You can still use them, and or landscape roses, you know, and knockout roses, that whole series. There's a rainbow knockout that I was putting into combination drought tolerant succulents with, in fact, South African proteaceae and so on. And does that sound crazy?
Well, no, it does, because I'm thinking of the phosphorus as soon as you
well,
said
yeah,
that.
Well, yeah, well, no, you have, with they, that. Yeah, you have to be careful that they don't mix, but the knockout rainbow roses with all of that drought tolerant stuff was fantastic. And so, you know, I think sometimes people need to think outside what is the typical image of a rose and think about going back to those more simple single petaled or double petaled roses.
I'm going to disagree. I appreciate the single roses, but I'm more a fan of the typical hybrid teas and floribundas and grandifloras with the full full flowered roses.
Well, you just brought up something. You just three terms.
Yes.
Hybrid tea, floribunda, grandiflora. Right. What are the differences?
So hybrid teas are typically explained by you have a decent sized bush with a pretty big flower, and it's one stem, one flower per stem. Floribundas are a slightly smaller bush, and they have one stem, maybe three or five flowers per stem. If you're lucky, maybe seven. And then in between those, it's like a cross between hybrid teas and floribundas as grandifloras. The advantage of those is you get all the beautiful size and craziness of a hybrid tea, but you get more blooms per stem. So if you're looking to fill your garden as opposed to cut roses, then the grandifloras are lovely. The floribundas are lovely. You always need some hybrid teas too, because those are the roses. But you know, if you're cutting, you want hybrid teas usually.
I will tell you though that as far as single flowered roses are concerned, Long Tall Sally is probably my favorite.
That is a nice one.
It's huge. We have one in our yard, and it gets enormous and produces a tremendous amount of flowers. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements and our special guest Natalie Stout. We're going to come back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements and our special guest, Natalie Stout, consulting rosarian, member of the San Diego Rose Society. We do have a class today. Want to make sure that we get that information out. It's April 19th in the Poway store at 9:30. It's growing strawberries with Richard Wright. So
correct.
He usually draws quite a crowd, so I would get here a little early. Just make sure you get a good seat, but it should be a very good class if you're interested in growing strawberries for yourself.
And if you listened last week, we talked about our favorite strawberries. I'm sure he'll touch on more varieties
on
than
more
you
of those.
Mentioned.
Right? Yes, yes. So back to our special guest, Natalie Stout, who's been kind enough to come in and talk to us about all kinds of things as far as roses are concerned.
I can put a factoid in here. Oh, strawberries are roses' closest genetic relative.
I didn't
Isn't
know
that. Isn't
that fun? Wow. That is very That's interesting. Cool. Very interesting. Oh, although they produce seed a little bit differently.
They do.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned earlier in the show too, and just wanted to touch on again, we have the Rose Society has a Rose Show coming up.
Yes, that's May 3rd and 4th, Saturday, Sunday at the Ronald Reagan Community Center in El Cajon. And I did want to thank you because Walter Anderson did donate some gift cards that we will be using as prizes for some of the categories in the Rose Show.
We're very happy to do that. Happy to support you. Since we're talking about the Rose Show, there, and we had mentioned earlier in the show too, there is a difference between growing roses in your yard just for beautifying your landscape and growing roses for competition. And I didn't realize how serious you people are about it until we were hosting the Rose Show up here. They actually make scissors to trim the edge of the foliage so that it has the clean serrations on it that occur naturally, but the natural ones are not necessarily great for competition. So tell us a little bit about growing roses competitively.
Okay. One of the things you mentioned earlier was how you see roses at Rose Shows that you don't necessarily see everywhere else. There is a breeder named Dave Bang, who we are all gaga for his roses. He has a lot of stripes. The form is just perfect exhibition form. He does a lot of minis. He has a few floribundas, but his floribundas are all exhibition quality too, whereas a floribunda might typically be a little more of a decorative, you know, out there form. So some of his are just gorgeous, and either those get hybridized or not hybridized, propagated locally, or we order them from a little nursery in Bucketoon in Mississippi. And they have to travel across the country in their little dark boxes and then get, you know, they're just babies when they come. So we wait a few years for them to grow up enough to give us really nice roses before they can compete. But that's how that works. And there's other, smaller growers that grow some beautiful things, or roses you just can't get. Like there's a Del Bard called Red Intuition that is red with a redder stripe. That's just,
I think we've had that.
I have a Red Intuition on the property.
Wow. Yeah.
It's a beautiful rose. It's one of her favorites. Yes. Among many favorites.
I just like the name Buckatuna.
So you mentioned striped, just real quick, a segue for me. You mentioned striped roses. Yes. I know that Ken's wife, Melanie, loves striped roses. I know Ken is not a big fan. I'm just saying it here on the radio.
Well, I was going to recommend some.
I'm not a big fan of George Burns. but
there are some, there are some nice striped roses.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Going along that line, what are some of your favorite roses?
Well, I'll jump off the striped thing. Maurice Utrillo is a beautiful yellow and magenta stripe that's a Del Bard.
That's a new one for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I really like George Burns. There's one that I think you have in stock called Peach Swirl. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. The 4th of July Climber is a beautiful stripe.
Yeah, that is a nice one.
Yeah. And then I don't know if you gentlemen know Ping Lim, who's the hybridizer for Altman Plants. He makes some very unique roses, and his tend to have just these incredible long-lasting times on the bushes, and they keep their form. They're very beautiful. He's got this little miniature called True Charm that is just so cute. It's orange with a white stripe, kind of a cupped form. It looks a little bit like Margot Koster. And it lasts and lasts, and it almost always has flowers.
Wait, that's a name from the past. Pretty. Margot Koster. Yeah, that's 40 years ago.
Yeah. And if you guys know where I can get a Margot Koster, I'll be your best friend. mine is very old, and she's finally giving up the ghost. Mm. So let's see. Some of my other favorites. I know I pick for color mostly, but a lot of people pick for fragrance. Mm-hmm. And Pope John Paul II is a white, very heavily petaled rose, really pretty form, very round, too heavy for its stems is its only flaw, but it is the best smelling rose. Mm-hmm. It wins a lot of competitions for fragrance. The classic Double Delight, the classic Mr. Lincoln. Yeah.
Imperial, I love.
Chrysler Imperial.
Yeah, Chrysler Imperial and Mr. Lincoln are...
They're very similar.
They are very similar. Much so, yep. Very old, too.
Yes. So you're going to get the mildew and the rust, but it's worth it.
You mentioned Double Delight.
I was surprised you didn't say anything when she said Double Delight. I was expecting you to open your mouth.
I won't say that I don't like it. I don't get it.
It's a gateway rose. People mm-hmm. recognize that rose from throughout their lives. And mm-hmm. that's a rose that they will walk up to. And they're so happy that they see a rose they mm-hmm. know by name. And that opens them up to all the other roses.
It is to this day. And it has been for at least the 40 years that I've been doing this work full time. One of the most popular roses, if not the mm-hmm. most popular rose that we sell every year.
We like it as well. We have it on the property. It's beautiful.
My dad told me one time, he and my mom had gone on vacation. They were in Portland and they went to the Rose Garden in Portland. And he said, and just to show you the variation in it based on climate, he said, Double Delight in the Portland Rose Garden is a completely different plant than it is here in San Diego.
Fascinating.
Completely different.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I don't think he was a big fan of it either, but once he saw it in Portland, it kind of changed his mind.
Interesting.
So,
I thought it was fascinating too, Natalie, that you said that sometimes the roses really want to be in semi-shade or even a little deeper shade. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I've classified them all as pure, bright, intense sun, 12 hours a day. And see, I don't think of San Diego and Portland are so vastly different. And when you mm-hmm. think, Portland's the rose city. So what is it? And it's damp. And I just in my mind imagine all kinds of disease and all that, but not.
Yeah.
Apparently they do well.
They do very well up there.
Yeah.
You know, is talking about fragrant roses, my favorite, I think as far as fragrance is concerned, is Fragrant Cloud.
That is just a
outstanding fragrance and kind of an unusual color with that kind of
very coral, pretty orange
coral,
red.
Yeah. Or coral orange red color. Yeah. That's a nice one.
Yeah. Also loves rust and mildew.
There are some varieties that definitely do.
Yes. It's hard to beat the old roses, though, and the Austins for some of the fragrance. Mm-hmm. Like,
oh, the Austins.
Sombril is, oh my gosh, it's so, and Sharifa Osma. I mean, there are some that I think go outside of what we typically think of as typical rose fragrance because they're those older musk, damask type of aromas. And
yeah. I think on the Garden America website with John Bagnesco, mm-hmm. he categorized a bunch of roses a couple of years ago. We talked about on the air. We ran through the list of all the fragrance, and you had mentioned the David Austin, but Olivia Rose is a beautiful David Austin, and it's very, very fragrant.
Yeah, you mentioned miniature roses, and that's something we don't sell a lot of. We sell very few miniature roses.
I've noticed you stock about five a year.
Yeah,
and I usually buy them all. Yeah.
No, it's not a very popular variety of rose, but if you go to the rose show, you're going to see miniatures that are, they'll just knock your socks off. Mm-hmm. They're absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that's interesting about rose shows too, is you go to the show and it's not just single flowers, but they're divided up. You have miniatures, grandifloras, floribundas, and hybrid teas, and then you have the single stems, then you have the sprays, and then you have the floating bowls, and then the bouquets, then the fragrant ones. The variety at the shows, the different classifications at the shows are really quite amazing. And you'll see some absolutely beautiful stuff, some really, really pretty stuff. And people that take
their rose growing
way inordinate amount of time to
I think
to
that was
do that.
That was the most eye-opening thing for me when we hosted the rose shows here. What you were mentioning earlier, Ken, is people with toothpicks and cutters and cotton and just all kinds of things. It was like they were getting their, you know, ready for Miss America pageant or something. There was so much stuff going on.
The amount of work
preparation
goes into the show is staggering. It really is amazing because it was the entry period when we would do the show was it 4 hours?
Oh, it was early.
We would start early. Open early just for the entrants to come in and start getting their roses ready to go.
In my novice mind, if I was going to enter a rose competition, I would cut the rose off my plant, put it in some water and bring it in. I wouldn't have known that I had to do all these other things to it. Yes.
Yeah. We've had people come who are first-time exhibitors and they'll bring a rose and go, how did I do? And they will have pulled all the foliage off and just have a stem in a jar with a rose on top.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work that way. That's the other thing about shows too, is you have novice category. Mm-hmm. Well, I know there's novice category. I don't know what the next step up from there would be.
Used to be an intermediate, and they're actually starting to kind of get the novice out of the picture because we're willing to help novices and get mm-hmm. them to where their roses are going to look just as good as anybody else's in the main competition.
Well, there
are novice tables still.
Yeah, that was what we used to do here. We didn't have a novice class here at our show, but we had Rosarians from the East County Rose Society mm-hmm. would and the judges would come in, and they would actually help people that we're not familiar with it and as to what you need to do and how you need to prepare.
And everybody's so generous with helping, even when they're madly trying to prepare their own roses, they will help other
people.
They
are. It was neat to watch the camaraderie and the friendships that were developing just from people. And they were competing against each other at many times, but they were all helping each other.
Yeah. It was. I do remember there were a few years where, I can't remember the names of the entrants, but, there were people that pretty much walked away with almost every award that we had. But it was always a lot of fun. And what was the dates for your show again?
Saturday, May 3rd and Sunday, May 4th.
Okay. And that's at the Ronald Reagan
Center in Oklahoma.
I may have to come out for that.
That would be great.
You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ, and our special guest, Natalie Stout, consulting Rosarian, member of the San Diego Rose Society. We're going to be back next week with another hour of Garden Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.